Most of you know I'm very passionate about this station scientist concept, and my first talk about this subject was 1991. And it's funny, my reaction, as we get our panelists situated, my reaction to that first talk proposing that we need to do more than just the weather, we need to be kind of the go-to person for science at our stations, was met with some very interesting reaction. A lot of people were very negative about the concept, and one of the more frequent things that I was told was, there's just no way that they'll let me do this stuff. Now, for the past few years, my committee and I have been giving you some strategies and things, but this year we decided that instead of hearing it from us, let's bring in some of the people that you have to deal with to try and get, you know, an extra 15 seconds to do a little something or to get a crew for a piece, and let's talk about, you know, what they think about this concept and more importantly, what kind of strategies they can offer us to try and help us become, you know, really what is the new paradigm, the station scientist. So, gentlemen, is there anything you want to make any comments before we start taking questions?
I think one of the first things from the last speakers has got to be topical. You could probably sell a news director if it's a news of the day, and you can springboard off of that into a sidebar or bring your expertise. Look, you guys are the experts. I have some insight in this story that's happening today, and that would be the number one point, I think, would be good for selling your story to a news director.
Good, Carl.
Yep. The ultimate answer is just bribe them. No, I'm kidding. Honestly, dovetailing off the last presentation, all of those bullet points, they apply to pretty much all content, but generally speaking, I agree. If it's topical, if you can personalize it, make it presented in layman's terms that doesn't make it too scientific-y, if that's even a word, and make it relevant. And, you know, sometimes stories work, sometimes they don't. But if you can do that and you can catch the viewer's attention, that's what succeeds. And that can be done on any number of levels. But weather is the number one reason people watch local news, and you are the experts. And one of my pet peeves as a news director is no aspersions against the National Weather Service, but I don't need to talk to their meteorologist. I need to talk to my own, and I need to showcase you as the expert. And there's nothing wrong with, if you want to say, tooting your own horn in that regard, because that's why you're meteorologists. You are the experts, and our viewers connect with you. And any opportunity we have to showcase you in a way that connects with viewers is extremely important for your own credibility and also for the stations. And it's not a marketing gimmick. It's just reality. That's why you're on staff. You're the experts, and it's about finding ways to showcase you in an unapologetic way, in a legitimate way. And so if you have ideas that tie in topically with a tornado or a hurricane or whatever it might be, and it might just be a little snippet of you further explaining how a storm funnel cloud breaks down into components or whatever, all the way down to just doing an environmental story, I would argue that the graph that was shown in the last presentation as far as environment has probably changed even since that poll, such that environmental news is probably right up there with health and medical, and you can tap into those type of current trends, again, in a way that's informative. So,
and by the way, you don't have to pitch your story all the way to the top to the news director or the EP or the assistant news director. I frequently go through my producers. Brian is one of Carl's producers. And so, you know, how do we approach you? And how do we, you know, get that extra 15 seconds? Or, you know, what are some strategies that, or what do you need from us, basically?
You know, I mean, the one thing I'm looking for is, you know, I mean, what's going on? Is, you know, is it something that's happening, you know, right now, you know, tornado warnings, and we need to talk about funnel clouds. But like the biggest thing is just every day, you know, just, you know, if you have an idea, just bring it to me. You know, there are gonna be times that I won't be able to get into the show, but you know, if you keep hammering it home, I'm more inclined to find a place for it, because I know it's so important to you, so I'll make it important to my show. You know, so the more you hammer it home, and you know, you have this idea and you have that idea, you know, if it's, you know, once every other day as opposed to once a month, I'm way more inclined to say, you know what, fix that in there. And you know, there are times that I've changed my template to add more time, because you know, I know that every day my meteorologist has something to do or has something he wants to show, and we just make time for it.
Any particular newscasts is better than others?
No, it morning shows, evening shows, mid-afternoon shows, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, obviously there's way more time in the mornings because you have all this content to fill in the mornings, and like a 9 p.m. or a 10 p.m. show, it's a little bit more, tight in terms of time, but, it doesn't matter what show I'm doing, I'll make time if it's something, relevant and topical and it's really important to you guys, I'll make time for it in the show.
And it does transcend newscasts. I mean, I agree, like on weekend news, perhaps there are fewer resources, and so there's the feeling of a producer who's desperate to fill time versus a weeknight show where a producer might be, I'm so tight on time, I can't even give you a full weather segment. It's about, back to what Jeff was saying, it's about the topicality, and it's also about differentiation. So if it is a big day like a tornado, everyone's looking for how can we be the most relevant to viewers in terms of severe storm coverage. If it's a slow day where there isn't a lot going on, but there's been an increase in cottonwood, which we've seen locally, and it looks like it's snowing outside in certain places based on the time of day and the wind. An explainer about why there's so much cottonwood in the air that takes 20 extra seconds in a weathercast is perhaps as important as the lead story because everyone can relate to it. So again, it's about the presentation and the top of mind. What are people talking about? And you could fight for something like a cottonwood explainer in any of the newscasts because it's relevant to any of the viewers. It's not as much as saying you have to have a two-minute package that takes up some of the time so the producer has to write less on a weekend show.
It could simply be a live shot, and I wouldn't say that you have to fight to fill the show. I think it would be more that we would make time for you, especially if you could dovetail it into a lead story.
Absolutely.
Now, do any of you have any either horror stories, success stories, questions? I mean, this is a chance to talk about these strategies, yeah. You want to use the microphone, Tammy, so the people in back can...
I have to commend all of you for being here at 8 in the morning, by the way. On
early.
A Saturday, what is going on?
Hey, more importantly, we appreciate you guys taking your time out of your weekend to come down and be with us. Thank you. Well, she didn't have her glasses on, so she didn't...
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Really simple. Many times I have pitched environmental stories to my news directors, and a lot of times they like the stories, but they're concerned about time or having a crew to go out and shoot it. Now, I'll be very politely persistent. Sometimes it takes 6 months or a year, or maybe it's the next station I go to that does the story. But there's another issue. If it's a good enough story, they tend to want to give it over to the news department. So how would you suggest that the meteorologist be able to retain this? This isn't, we're not talking about a 15-second add-on to a weathercast or an explainer. We're talking about a really interesting environmental story that you can actually kind of zip up, sex up, make something that the public would really want to see that is pertinent. How do you save it from going to the news reporter?
I think you have to stand your ground and say, listen, I'm the expert in this case, and it is part of the culture that you have to develop in the newsroom. To say that these stories are important, and it's kind of a daily hammering away to say this is important to the station, and that we have to put our expert in front of this particular story.
Yeah, and I completely agree. Plus, I mean, part of it depends on your management team. I tend to. If people pitch a story, I tend to want to give them the story. But it's also in this industry about doing more with less. And so one strategic point you could make would be, you don't have to dedicate a reporter to this because I'll do it. And I'll be the reporter, and you're getting more value out of me, and I'm making a difference. Because it's also about differentiation. And if you are showcasing yourself as a meteorologist who is also, again, connected in storytelling, relates better to viewers, and it benefits you, benefits the station. We actually have a DVD of an example of a story that we did, 2 weeks ago that we brought, which I think speaks to what you're talking about. Do you want to play that? It's a real short story, but it's an example of connecting with your meteorologist, connecting with environmental, and a story that can transcend newscasts. And as it gets put in, I'll just give you another example. Again, in the industry, as you all know, is continuing to radically change in terms of everything from salaries to staffing to everything else. And in this example, this is from our Free to Be Green franchise that we do locally, and this is something that is sponsorable. So the sponsor doesn't dictate the content, the sponsor just supports the notion of green, and green is a big initiative nationwide, obviously, right now. So that's something that can generate revenue for the station on the website, with resource links, with ads, and with billboards on the broadcast side. So it becomes a win-win-win across the board.
You know, I'll say one thing as in terms of producer. My favorite thing about an afternoon editorial meeting is when reporters say, I've already set this up, we're good to go at 3 o'clock. I can't say no to that. So, I mean, honestly, if you walk in and say, look, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, I have this set up because this is a really good story, I'm way more inclined to say, go do it.
Audio?
So.
The Ford Mustang has been a symbol of American muscle cars for decades. And this 65 ragtop is no exception.
Should do 0 to 60 in about 4 to 5 seconds.
But not using the V8 engine it rolled off the assembly line with 43 years ago. Instead, believe it or not, it'll go that fast running on electricity.
I like rumble and noise, so without having the original motor in it, it's a little different for me.
Carl has been working on this Mustang for nearly 5 months. And has been customizing classic cars for years. There is a saying that you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Sit pretty. Sit up. Get up. Sit pretty.
But with Carl?
Yeah, this old dog learned a few tricks. So I did a lot of thinking on this, where to position the motors, how to position the motors. The top of the gas tank's the trunk floor. We build a box to go in place of the gas tank that'll hold all the controls.
And where you would normally pump gas into a Mustang like this, well, behind it is where the plug will go to charge it.
About 60 miles on the range before it needs recharged.
The car was purposely painted green to fit their eco-friendly theme.
If your heart's into environmental issues like mine is, I think it's important that you do things that have the least amount of impact on the environment. And by driving an electric Mustang, that's quite a statement.
The interior, while it doesn't look like much now, will also be earth-friendly, using hemp upholstery and recycled foam.
Give me a paw. Give me a paw.
I guess an old dog can learn new tricks.
Your left.
Jason Boyer, News 2.
Now, I would argue that that story touches on the environmental. It touches on, but it transcends environmental. It appeals to male viewers, to car lovers, to collectors, and across the board. And it's an opportunity for your meteorologist to, again, tap into an issue I think that's relevant. And some of the direct feedback we got on that was exactly that. People who aren't into the environment, when they saw the teaser, like, oh, I got to see that story about the cool car. And then you end up grabbing those viewers because it relates to them on a personal level. But again, it's all about how your operation is organized too. And if you don't have a photographer available and you have to fight for one, again, it's about saying, This is why it's important, and you won't necessarily win all of the battles, if you will, but it's about persevering and pointing to the differentiation that you can achieve.
And I think you need to sell yourself too, not just as the weather anchor, the meteorologist, but also as the environmental specialist. Mm-hmm. And those type of stories, I think, really can transcend and broaden your value to the television station as well, or radio, or wherever you're working.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're passionate about a particular subject, and for example, I love golf. One of our golf courses in Detroit, the TPC course just outside of Detroit, was designed by Jack Nicklaus, and what they did was they essentially took a piece of wasteland and turned it, they saved all the environmentally sensitive areas, the wetlands, turned it into an Audubon-certified wildlife conservatory. Oh.
I was thinking on my way over here, like, even if you worked at a station where it's... you know, it bleeds, it leads. How could you get involved in your newsroom? And I was thinking, well, maybe the fire department has some kind of conservation going on. Maybe the paramedics have some new technology that they're using that, you know, has developed not using plastics or something. I don't know. You could talk to them and even get involved in a station that all they do is lead, you know, newscasts with bloody stories. So,
yeah, Jeff, what is this that we're seeing here?
Can you press play? Just press play. Oh, there it goes.
I'll finish my story later.
This is a see now that people are going green at home.
we've created a whole franchise around
in the game of life
going green, and
the
this is just a simple
is learning that living green is a lot of fun
story.
Last fall they competed in Stapleton's recycling challenge.
So I thought, geez, we already know a lot and we already do a lot and there's probably not a lot for us, but that wasn't the case. We found out a whole bunch of things that not only improved our recycling, but made it easier for us to do.
Denver Recycles came in and gave them a room-by-room audit to see where and how they could recycle more. After 6 weeks, the Killingers saw a 40% increase in the amount they recycled.
Thanks, Drew.
Well, a lot of it was, I think, the paper from the home office, that we were letting a lot more of that slide into the garbage than we were aware of.
So they added a second trash can in the office specifically for waste paper. They also got smarter about what goes in the big recycling bin outside.
Cans, and the thing about these are you do not have to take the paper off of them. They say it burns up while it's recycled. And any plastic that has a screw-on cap is recyclable, no matter what the number is on the bottom. Again, anything screwed on, make sure that you throw it in the recycling without the cap.
The Killingers also learned how to compost.
Well, it's a great way to get rid of all the kitchen scrap. Instead of throwing them in the garbage can where they get really smelly and all that, and fill up our landfills.
For this family, the recycling challenge has turned into more than a game. It's now a way of life.
Was it fun?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Denver Recycles tells us there is still some confusion about what you can or cannot go into that recycling bin. Karen and Jim will learn more about the program. All you have to do is head to our website at cbs4denver.com.
You know, an important thing out of both of those stories, I'm sorry.
Bike library. You can check a bike out here and it won't cost you a penny. That's thanks to a federal grant, some private donations, a team of volunteers, and a fleet of donated and then repainted bicycles.
For 1 week, yeah.
At Fort Collins' newest library.
I like this one.
There are no books.
A lot easier to ride.
But lots of bikes.
Might need to bring the seat down.
And once you have a membership, then anytime you need a bike, come in and just check one out of our fleet, and away you ride.
Chris Prince-Gatis is the head librarian here. There are 33 bikes in the library's growing collection. Use your photo ID to become a member, and you can check out a bicycle for up to a week at a time.
My cousin's in town from Indiana, and he needs a bike. It works perfectly, yeah.
When you check your bike out from the library here, you can also check out a helmet and a lock. Now, the lock's pretty important because if the bike ends up getting stolen, you owe $300.
That's really the experimental part of it. We're putting a lot of faith in society to return these bikes.
It's like a Danish bike.
For some people, like this woman from Italy, it's free two-wheeled vacation transportation.
Where I live, I just get around by bike, so this is ideal for me, and I'll just be here a couple weeks, so.
For others, the free bikes are their only transportation. Scott Loins is going shopping.
Look for some clothes, and after that, I'm going to keep it for a whole week and I'll be riding it to work.
Loin says he's been telling his friends about the bike library since it opened in April.
I kind of spread the word everywhere. I almost wanted to stop spreading the word because when I came down the second time, there wasn't any bikes left.
But the collection of donated bikes is growing for the now more than 300 people who've signed up to be members of the bike library.
That particular story, that was a general assignment reporter that did that story, but I would make a case for anyone in our media, you know, anyone in the weather department to say, hey, that story was my story. I should have been doing that story. I should have been the one to front that story or go and report on that story because that's kind of my beat, you know, and then you could have this resource out on the streets doing something else.
And I, you know, the last story was a good call to action story. Here's how to get a bike, how you can ride around type of thing.
Absolutely.
The first story, the Game of Life recycling one and the one that we showed, if you notice, there were no scientists in those stories. They were all about the people. And again, it's not reflective of scientists necessarily. It's just reflective of the weather anchors are the experts. They don't need to have a corroboration in the form of a talking head on camera. And it also talks to the stigma that science reporting can have, where your producer or news director might say, oh, that's just really boring. This is a way to approach the story that achieves the goal of the topic without hopefully making it boring. And I guess that's always the challenge, is that you don't want to talk in such technical terms. And these are all environmental, obviously. If we were doing something more like, you know, tracking earthquake faults or again, tornadoes or whatever, you know, there's a balance there. And that's the challenge, back to reporting it in ways that people can connect with. You know, in the industry, you've all heard it, I'm sure. You know, there's the notion, talk on a fourth grade level, you got to dumb it down for the masses, whatever. I would argue that viewers are more intelligent than that, and you don't necessarily have to dumb it down as much as you think, but you do have to present it in a way that's clear, because they, you know, conceptually they only hear it once. With a newspaper, you can reread and you can digest. With a TV story, in theory, you see it once. Granted, you could go online and you could see it a billion times after that, but that takes extra work. If you're talking in general to the viewers, it's got to be clear, creative, and grab their attention. They watch it, and then they retain something, hopefully, from it.
Right. Make sure there's a takeaway.
Yeah, and one other thing. You have to give the viewer the relevance. They have to understand, why is this story relevant to me? And that's a very critical part of it as well, and you have to do it interesting. Kathy, you had something you wanted to... You want to, if you want, yeah.
At NBC, we did a lot of this because I did weekends, had a lot of time to report during the week. The two things we have done, one at CBS, is we have something like you. It's called the green scene. Take this off so I can look at everybody. And the green scene is something that we do every week on Friday. Friday can be a slow news day, and everybody contributes to that, meteorologists or reporters, depending on if they have an idea, and whoever comes more prepared and pitches
right.
a story has a better chance of getting on the air that day. The other things that a couple of great stories that we did when I was at NBC, one of them was we did a really good job of combining weather so that we were the expert with the news. And during a big heat wave, what we did is we heard, digging through and calling people, we heard that this not-for-profit organization in Center City, Philadelphia, was painting roofs white in low-income housing so it would reflect the sunlight and so that people's utility bills would be lower. And we went out, did the story, did the stand-up from the roof, went live from the roof where they were painting the roofs for these people, interviewed the woman, checked out her utility bill. She was so grateful. And we got a huge response from the public in general. They liked the story, and they wanted to know if they could get in on it. So we had a payback, and we also were the expert because it was obviously weather-related. So getting the stories from, you know, your health departments, your colleges and universities who are doing research, all these places, just calling up and saying, hey, what's going on? You never know who you're going to find in your location.
Yeah,
just wanted to offer that.
Make sure you're on their email list. Make sure you call them maybe once a month.
And just underscoring that and what Brian said also, if you come prepared, the news director, EP, producer would love nothing more than to be told, I have ready-made content. And you, again, this can be as simple as you want an extra 15 seconds to do an explainer to, you want to do a full-fledged package. It's really a matter of you saying, I'm engaged in this, I want to do this, as opposed to waiting to be approached by the producer. Hey, anything going on today? Would you like to do this? One is much more engaged dynamic, obviously, and if you are outwardly buying in because you really are into doing something beyond a forecast presentation, I would think, for the most part, again, shops are going to be different place to place, but by and large, producers would relish that and welcome that and say, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things, you know, and you all watch competing newscasts, you'll say, oh, they did this, or, oh, we should have done that. You know, how much of that was driven by the meteorologist in terms of the presentation of, you know, the day's key weather elements?
And it doesn't have to be, you know, every day or, you know, once a week. You know, I mean, how many newscasts do we do a day? I'm sure how many newscasts do your stations do a day? You know, once, you know, every couple of days, you know, once every other week, you know, a couple times a month. It doesn't have to be every time.
And the other thing, again, back to, I'm sorry, did you have a question?
I just elaborate on what Kathy was saying. One thing that
we're all really busy. I'm going to be doing 6 hours of newscasts coming up starting on the 7th of July. But the thing is, if you decide to make this your beat, like she said, if you let the news director, the assignment desk, know that the environmental and science is going to be your beat, and you're the one that is the contact of those people, you do have an advantage to be able to pick and choose the stories, and you can pass other ones on to the news desk, which is a really valuable thing if you do want to do environmental and science stories.
Or if nothing else, just say that you have the right of first refusal. I mean, if they say that they have an environmental story, and let's say you've got a busy weather week and you don't have time, then say, hey, listen, give it to the reporter this time. I simply can't do it. But also keep in mind that we've been kind of focusing on doing pieces. Keep in mind, don't forget breaking news. If there's a plane crash, you should be the first person checking to see if there's any possibility that that's weather-related or not, and that's something that adds value to what these folks are doing in the newsroom. If there's a chemical spill, and you have some knowledge of chemistry, or you know, in one case, we had a train derail in Detroit, and the car was leaking methyl alcohol. They sent me out to do a test burn of methyl alcohol to demonstrate just how volatile that stuff is. It's so volatile that some people use it as racing fuel. And so the first responders were damn glad that there was no spark, because that stuff burned so hot and so fast, there was no flame. It was no flame until it actually started burning stuff. So these people could be out in the middle of this invisible fire that all of a sudden they're on fire. And it was probably the most visual and the most relevant story that we did in all of our breaking news coverage. And again, came from the station scientists. So think about breaking news and think about things where you can approach your producers and your news management and say, hey, listen, because I'm the scientist, I can add value to the story, and I can say some things, and I know some things that the news people don't know. And that just adds, that just makes your whole station coverage that much better.
Yeah, like right now, I mean, we deal with, you know, wildfires.
I'll pull out a mic a little bit if you can.
Yeah. We deal with wildfires and tornadoes and, you know, I mean, all the weather-related stuff. I'd love to have, if you got, like, you know, I can show you the maps of where the winds are going. I can show you, you know, 2 days out that this place is not going to get any rain, and it's just going to make it hard for firefighters. That's like 20 seconds right there in two maps that you just showed, and I can include that in my coverage, and that's huge for me.
How good, Kelly?
Carl, I think you made this point that it's important to build up your meteorologist as the expert in this situation. Mm-hmm. You would prefer that to say having that meteorologist know an expert and do an interview with somebody else?
Yes, and again, it's a little bit different shop to shop and among news directors. It's just a pet peeve of mine when I hear, even if it's a reporter story, well, who do I go talk to? Somebody at the National Weather Service? No, we got our own meteorologists here. Let's talk to them. And again, it's not gimmicky. It's just, you know your stuff. Again, no aspersions against the National Weather Service.
Right.
They know their stuff too. But, you know, we don't, I would argue, if, as meteorologists, you don't rely on the National Weather Service. You use them as a resource, but you do your own forecasting and you understand weather. And again, that's not to say that we couldn't talk to the National Weather Service or another entity. I mean, in Colorado, we have, I think you guys went to NCAR yesterday. We have NREL is here, the National Earthquake Center. We have a lot of federal and weather resources here. We have climatologists who are studying, you know, ice pellets on the top of mountains and all sorts of things. So it's not that I don't want to tap into those, but I'd rather look internally first and say, is it appropriate for our own meteorologists to be the expert? And sometimes that would transcend having the talking head on tape, but instead they're not part of the video presentation, but then are there as a Q&A afterward. I mean, there are any number of applications that can be done. I just think it's a cop-out to say you shouldn't use your own people first, because if we don't, ultimately, of what value are you other than standing in front of a key wall saying it's going to be 80 degrees tomorrow?
It is a culture in the newsroom, though. I mean, it takes time, and you really have to teach your producers and executive producers and your news director about this. I mean, last week or 2 weeks ago, I pulled a piece because the reporter didn't talk to our own meteorologist about a story. I was livid. I thought that was ridiculous. I mean, what are we paying them for?
So,
not to bash the scientists who are in the room from
NCAR. So, could I just get a quick show of hands? Because I'm curious. How many of you think your news director would rather see you as the expert than a talking head in most cases? And how many of you think their news director would rather see an outside expert? Okay, thanks. Sure. Right.
Right.
You have a set list of experts.
Of course, and again, I don't mean to, I guess it's good we're generating debate, but again, it's when appropriate, and everything is within context, but it is a cultural issue, and it also transcends weather. This gets back to, let's say there's a crime story that a reporter's on, and they think, well, police won't go on camera, I can't do the story. Of course you can do the story. Talk to witnesses, you have the police report. You don't need necessarily the
Absolutely.
Typical official You know, and again, if you watched all three of those stories, none of them had the so-called official sound in them. I'm sorry, you were gonna comment about that. And the value to that, aside from, again, you have background in that and you're able to talk about it, is that when you do get the person from the U.S. Geological Society, you have context with which to ask questions. So right. When you're interacting with them, you're not saying, well, tell us what an earthquake is. You're able to actually expound upon your knowledge in a way that puts you in presentation-wise in the position of knowledge, and now you are tapping into a colleague and not deferring to them, which then underscores your own area of expertise. And again, it's not gimmicky, it's just, it is the truth. And viewers can see through, I think, you know, the fake personalities and things that aren't legit. So it's not about trying to be something you're not. It's about tapping into your knowledge base and then building on that in a way that isn't, you know, preachy or condescending, but is your viewers look at you as the expert. That's the value of having, you know, the seals and all you know, the whole nine yards. So.
Yeah, Michael Kuz, City TV, Toronto. Hi, Claire. a couple nuggets. A nice thing that I think we're doing, and I think it would be easy to incorporate, is, you know, you all, I'm sure a lot of you have a million hours of weather and shows. You're doing a couple hours at supper, and you're doing the 11, or, and you may not have time to go out and turn a story every day. And if your news director or your producer is asking you to do it, you're working from 10 in the morning to midnight. But you know, you can always sort of wrap that and still make you the expert. So if you have an idea, for example, for a weather story, or whether is a story that day, whether it's hail or whether it's a heat wave, they at our station, they throw to me, and then I throw to the story. Mm-hmm. And then that's tied in with the weather. So if it's a big story, it would be, you know, I throw to a story that a reporter turned on the damage, and then I'd go into the weather, or why it happened, or how it's happening, or what's happening right now. And that's sort of all tied into the, you know, into the weather package. So you become the expert. You become the anchor of all those weather stories, whether you're doing them or not. You know, if you have the luxury of field producers, then all you have to go out and do is a couple of stand-ups, and then the story's your story, if that's a possibility as well. If not.
And that happens a lot at our station, too, you know, especially come wintertime. We routinely have our meteorologists throw to our anchors out in the field, you know, covering the weather or covering, you know, bad roads or, you know, whatever the topic may be. I mean, it gets you involved in the story without actually having to go do the legwork of being in the story. It gets you, you know, you get your face on TV to do it, and you show that you're the expert. And I mean,
the people at home are none the wiser.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Right. And yeah, you should remind, you know, you could remind your boss that the anchor desk, you're not the sidekick. If you're on the desk,
that's right. You're the anchor of the science.
Just as much as the
show.
News anchors or the sports anchor.
And
that's a really good point.
In reference to what Paul said, and he was kind of a player in it at the Washington conference. Air France plane went off the runway in Toronto, burst into flames. Maybe you saw the video. It turned out to be lightning strike, downburst. Paul helped me wrangle up a couple of experts that were at the conference. We turned a nice story with our Washington bureau there, so we had a camera come down, did a live there from Washington, and it worked out great. Nobody else had that same element, right? So if you have the opportunity to add this little extra information when maybe one of the other stations is just has a reporter doing a story on it, but not that scientific sidebar mm-hmm. as to why it's happening, you know, you can really separate yourself from the rest of the stations out there. Thanks.
And it would be news even in that example, as if it's a plane crash and you find out that it wasn't weather, well, that's news too.
That's just as important. Right?
That's just as important.
Well, and I don't know how many of you are pilots in this room. You know, that tends to be, you know, background. A lot of weather people are pilots, and again, it may not be directly weather related, but it really is, because to be a pilot you have to understand wind and everything else. And so again, not from a gimmicky point of view, but from a, hey, I'm a pilot, you know, here's another area of expertise for me, here's what may or may not have contributed. And you have to avoid, obviously, speculating on the cause of a crash to the extent that you don't have all the circumstances. But I'll give you another example related to kind of weather as science. Channel 9 locally did this the other day, this week. A viewer had sent in digital photos of a lightning strike in Highlands Ranch, and the speed of the camera was such that they were able to capture three distinct points of the actual bolt. Wow. And so they dissected, and you know, it took 30 seconds, which is really cool TV. They had the first photo where it was the bright lightning, air-to-ground lightning, and then the second photo, you know, was whatever, 9 milliseconds later or whatever it was, where you saw the lightning as it starts to dissipate, and then the third was where it was just the trail, and you could kind of see how the electrons, you know, kind of went their own way. And it was just cool. And that was something that was driven by a viewer, that the meteorologist was then able to say, hey, let's, you know, thanks to this viewer, let's check out this lightning. And it was just neat. It was really cool. And that, again, wasn't brain surgery, but it was interesting to see that. And how often do you see a lightning strike, you know, caught like that?
And then if you're, you know, sitting across the street, you're like, darn it, I wish we had that.
I'm like, why can't that viewer get
And then it starts to snowball, and, you know, you have 4 environmental specialists, and I have 5 environmental specialists, and before you know it, everybody's environmental specialist.
Yeah, Mike?
Well, 2 quick questions. First of all, when you had that story pulled for not using your own meteorologist, did he use his meteorologist when... Well, never mind. That's
yeah.
I was just wondering about that. No, I want to ask a question, and it may never be a problem. I don't know if it is. It never has in ours. But is there a danger or something? Do you have to be at all cautious that the meteorologist, as the station scientist, begins to drift a little bit too far from the reason that he or she was hired? You're smiling. It sounds
yes.
like we hit a nerve.
It happened last night.
Okay. Can you tell us about that? Because
sure.
that obviously is something you have to balance, and again, it's going to vary from shop to shop. Yeah.
Here's the controversy. I'll stir more debate in the room. We have a freelance meteorologist, Sonny Roseman, Rob Roseman. He is a climatologist as well, and he disagrees with the popular notion that global warming is caused by people. And I love the global warming debate because there are multiple sides to it. But we had a global warming story on, and he chose afterward to interject his comments as a climatologist, of course. That puts the station in the situation of, was it an appropriate platform for him to do that, because those are his own personal views as an educated expert. You know, I go back and forth on it, because, you know what, on the one hand, no. You know what, he didn't really need to share that. On the other hand, you know, how many news stories are brought up hook, line, and sinker that it is a guaranteed proven truth? And so the forum may not have been right, and I understand why he made the comments. But you go back and forth. It's, you know, it's like, are we a platform for people's personal opinions based on their own education? It's a gray area, and I would argue there's an appropriate forum for it. That may not have been it. And we got email responses, you might imagine, and they're split 50-50. And, you know, it's easy to respond to the ones who support him. It's harder to respond to the ones who don't, because then they say they'll never watch you again because all you're doing is being a mouthpiece for ignorance, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I'd rather, you know, be able to take an educated stance, and that gets back to why, you know, you guys are all experts and you all will have varying opinions, but where do you draw that line in terms of personal opinion versus what the station may or may not endorse? Yeah, we've actually had that at our station as well. We had a meteorologist, weekend meteorologist, who would report on murders during the week. And it didn't quite work, in my opinion. You know, she was more than capable. I was not the news director at the time, but she was more than capable, a testament to her skills. But talk about confusing the viewer. Hey, here I am giving you the forecast, but let me tell you about this kid who got shot first. It's like, what is that? So absolutely. And so, I think it gets back to what's your area of expertise. For instance, our weekend meteorologist does our environmental reporting and or anything else that relates to environment or weather during the week. For instance, if there was a wildfire, it would make perfect sense that he might be on that story. But he wouldn't. You know, I made a conscious decision as a news director that he will not do murder stories and shooting stories, even if there is breaking news, and he is the easiest option to pull. No, you have to make the commitment from a management point of view, and that's kind of like with all these green initiatives that everyone's doing. You commit to it, and if that's a showcase vehicle for your meteorologist, then it's a priority, and you just have to make the line clear, and the assignment manager or editor needs to know. No, you're not gonna go there, and that gets back to what I was saying. If you're a pilot or if you're an earthquake expert or whatever, there are areas of expertise that you all have that can be tapped into legitimately. Mm-hmm. But once you go into the hey, talk about this, even though you don't know anything about it, rain, it doesn't work. It's got to be declared.
Yeah, and that's on a case by case basis too. I think we probably have that discussion almost every week. Like, is this story for the environmental specialist, or is this a weather story, or is this a reporter story? So, I think even after you do the story, it's good to have those kind of conversations. But I think it's on a case-by-case basis. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an evolving field.
Yeah, good, Jay. We have about 4 minutes left, so I'd like to get as much in as we can here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Paul. Yeah. I was just going to, as many of you know, I came from news management into weather, so I kind of know both sides of the fence here. One thing that's important, and I know a lot of us are chiefs here, and a really good thing for us to do if we don't have time to do this because we're doing the evening newscast and stuff is to really encourage the younger people, the number three or the number four in our departments, to embrace this concept. And it's so important these days to boost their prominence, getting them on the big shows, because given the current economic realities, and I think Carl perhaps can identify with this, it tends to make your department a little more layoff-proof if you have a strong number three or four person who's actually built up a reputation by doing this sort of thing on a daily basis. It certainly can't hurt anyone, even for young people, to expand their skill set. And given the economy, I think it's perhaps helpful.
Mm-hmm. And again, weather is the number one reason viewers watch local news. I don't care where you live, even if it's sunny California, I would argue that's the case. They want to know if their picnic plans are ruined, if they can go hiking, whatever, and weather from a technological side has the most relevance to viewers. Otherwise, you don't need your Doppler radar and stuff. You just need to tell me if it's cloudy and sunny tomorrow. You know, if viewers didn't want to see a hailstorm broken down, you know, to various levels with the red and green and purple, you know, globs, then stations wouldn't invest in that technology. So your roles as weather storytellers, I think, directly is relevant to viewers. And obviously your challenge is to present it in the most viewer-friendly way. I have a question for all of you, and I'd love to hear your input. I know we have to wrap it up.
But, 2.5 minutes, we're good.
In terms of the weather team, like he was just saying, on big weather stories, it sounds like most of you are chief meteorologists, how do you, as chief meteorologists, share the presentation such that you don't detract from yourself as the expert? You know what I mean? Where there's a tornado or a hurricane, and then you're tossing to your weather colleague to explain something that perhaps you should be explaining. What is your opinion on that? Does that make sense?
Hey, good, Nan.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I think the stronger your team is, the stronger your chief meteorologist looks, because you're the chief of a stronger team. And I just think that makes you overall look better.
It's not a caveat to that, because I think it goes with it, though, is that if you're the chief, make sure your people are on the same page as you are as well. Don't throw them any surprises if you're not expecting any surprises. And so if there is an aspect of a breaking weather or something like that, And obviously sometimes you can't, but as much as you can, you know, we are in the communication business, and sometimes we are the worst communicators within ourselves that we can be. So, you know, every time you're not talking on the air, be talking to your people if they're not talking on the air, and make sure that you send out a single consistent message, even if you are giving different parts of that message. Make sure you're on the same page. There is nothing worse to a viewing public that you're saying one thing, and your morning guy or whoever's working with you in number two or number three or number four guy is saying something else. So make sure your message is consistent, but do everything you can to make your guy look good as well, because it will never detract from you. It'll only improve. I mean, a rising tide floats all boats.
Well, this has been an extraordinarily candid and a very beneficial discussion. I can't thank you guys enough for getting up early. This is your weekend, and you got up early for us, but this has been very beneficial to a lot of broadcast meteorologists around this country, and your words are going to travel far, and we really appreciate you guys coming down. Thank you very, very much.
Well, again, thank all of you for coming out to this early in the morning.